Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuckin'ots? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. How's it going? I am recording this on Super Bowl Sunday, probably during the game. I don't know. I don't watch it. And I'm not saying that with any condescension. I don't pay attention to it. I understand that many think it's a national holiday. It's probably in the times we're living in now, one of the more important ones. This is the day that I think in the new cultural political environment is probably really what determines someone's Americanism on some level. This is it, man. So And through that lens, I am horrendously un-American in my my complete apathetic disposition towards sports in general, organized sports or watching sports. But again, and I've said it before, I think that if I'd been trained differently, like anybody, it would have been a different story. I'm an athletic enough person. I just not a big fan of I guess I never was on a great team. until I started working with fictitious female wrestlers. No, I just was not. I was basically on the equivalent of the Bad News Bears when I was in Pee Wee baseball and in high school. I never played any sports. I never thought to. Maybe I should have. Like I do. I've talked about that though. You know, I do have a regret that I was not really taught how to engage in healthy competition. But it seems like given the political climate. There are many Americans that were not taught about healthy competition, just about winning at any cost, no matter what the rules, and no matter who gets hurt or dies or loses their life or job or status in the country. You know, it's about winning, man, right? It's about winning. That's not healthy competition. So today on the show, I talked to two women. Actually, I'm going to talk to Lori Kilmartin, who's been on the show a couple of times. We'll do a little talk with her about her new book, Dead People Suck, A Guide for Survivors of the Newly Departed. That comes out in February, soon, next week. And also Ricky Lindholm from Garfunkel & Oates, but more recently from her show Another Period on Comedy Central. Going to talk to her. I'm planning on becoming a more social person in my new house. I think I'm going to entertain more, but I'm so not the entertaining kind that I used to back in the day. Well, not too long ago, I would have dinner parties, but there was never any consistency to it. So at my age, with my my position in the world in terms of what people think of me and all the people I know, I think that if I said, you want to come over for dinner, they'd be like, what's happening? Why is he having us over for dinner? I know how to be sociable. I know how to have people over. And, you know, I'm a very good host, but I would just think people would find it startling. I would imagine they'd be like, what do we talk about with Mark? What are we going to do over there? What's he want? What's he going to do? What's he going to, I don't understand. Maybe this is all a reflection of me. Maybe people would be like, that'd be great. Let's have dinner. What? Maybe I'm just a normal person to people looking from the outside in, or they get me. Whereas I am like some monster. I feel like I'm some like social pariah with intensity problems, emotionally unpredictable. You know what I'm saying? So look, Lori Kilmartin has been on this show before. I love her. She's a writer over at Conan. I've known her as a comic forever. She's a hilarious comic. I had her on fairly recently about her comedy special about her dead dad. And this is a book, I guess, sort of built from that idea. Her new book is Dead People Suck, A Guide for Survivors of the Newly Departed. It's out February 13th. You can pre-order it now. So this is me talking to Lori Kilmartin.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
I am sorry that I was home at the other house, at my other home when you showed up.
I feel terrible that you were startled on a Sunday morning.
You feel terrible? Why didn't I know? I've done worse things. There was one time I was just sitting in this house and not planning on doing anything, getting ready to go. And Lisa Wampanelli just walked up to my door.
That's a tough wake-up call.
Yeah, I should have known
Lisa Lampanelli on a Sunday morning.
Thank God I knew her well enough to where I didn't panic or tell her, God forbid, that I had forgotten that you were coming. I did not let on.
That's good.
So what's the book called?
It's called Dead People Suck.
Wow. Is it out?
It's out February 13th.
Because the last time I saw you, you did the special.
Yeah.
Which was it was jokes
45
about your,
jokes about my dead dad.
Yeah. Now, what compelled you to, because this is a real book about grieving, really.
Yeah.
It's about moving through the grieving process. You were not a psychologist, but you must have gotten so much feedback for your comedy show that you're like, why not, you know, help out? What was the incentive?
Well, I did a special and I just was sitting on it. No one was interested. So I was like, all right, well, maybe I can put this into a book.
Uh-huh.
And I had written a parenting book a while ago called Shitty Mom. And it's just like really short kind of.
How'd that do?
It was a New York Times bestseller for a week.
That's good. That's great.
And you only need it, even if it's just a week, you can put it on the cover.
Yeah.
So I pitched this like Shitty Mom of Grief to the editor who edited Shitty Mom, and she bought it.
Uh-huh.
So in that time, then CISO bought my special, but it's very different. I stole a few jokes from myself just to plant, some early laughs. And then just essays, like, just, you know, 500 words or less, basically, that you can read on the toilet about cancer and death and funerals and grief.
That you wrote. They're your essays. But did you, like, but it does, it's supposed to, like, what was the feedback on the 45 jokes about, you know, your dead dad? I mean, I have to assume that people, you've got a very specific type of reaction.
I think the people that talked to me told me they loved it.
Like, did you get emails, though, and that kind of stuff?
Yes,
Twitter stuff? Like, oh, my God, thank you?
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of hidden on CISO. You had to get CISO to watch it.
It's gone now, right, CISO?
Yeah, CISO's gone, and my special's sort of hidden someplace. Hopefully, we'll be able to get it out.
I know, I just talked to Karen Esposito about her.
Take My Wife?
Yeah. Does CISO own your special?
They bought it for 3 years,
uh-huh,
and they lasted a year.
Uh-huh.
So I don't exactly know. It's sort of tangled up right now.
So that's disconcerting.
It's distressing, yes.
Because you can't access your special.
I know. I have it saved on a Vimeo, a secret Vimeo location, but I can't really do anything with it.
What would happen if you did that? Would CISO come after you? What's left of
who
them?
Who would come after me? I don't know. That's a great idea.
I mean, why not just post a link, see what happens?
Yeah, I could.
What happened with CISO? Did they alert you? Did you get a letter saying, like, it's over?
No, I read about it on Twitter. That's how I find out all the bad news about my life, or if anything's canceled, I find out on Twitter. <That's>, I'm like, oh, okay.
That's so horrible.
Yeah.
Because it's like, it's something, like, I know what it's like to have, like Marin. The fourth season of Marin is not on international Netflix. There's nothing I can do about it.
Why?
I don't know. They're all on the American Netflix, all four seasons of Marin. But for some reason, they didn't post the last season. And it's not my show. Like, it's not even an IFC show. It's Fox 21 or Fox Studios, which doesn't exist anymore. So I don't even know how to react when people are like, when can we see it? I'm like, I don't know.
Move.
Yeah, call somebody.
Take a vacation.
I don't know who to get in touch with. And then I asked my manager, what are we doing about this? They're like, I don't know.
Well, it doesn't make sense in a money situation because people would want to see it worldwide. You have fans all over the world.
Well, right. But yeah, I don't know how many. And what am I going to do? Get Ted, the head of Netflix involved. Like, what can we do about this, man? I know you're busy giving, other comics $50 million for an hour.
Oh my God. But not Monique.
Who deserves it? We all know that Monique.
She's an Oscar winner.
Yeah. She's funny.
Yes,
but I don't need it. It's so weird when you get into, we can talk about politics with confidence, but when you get into these nuanced sort of like, well, that one's loaded up with race and gender
and sex,
issues.
Yeah.
So, hey, I wish her luck.
Good luck to everybody. I'm going to tiptoe out of the room and hope you guys sort it out.
Yeah. Maybe it'll be okay. Don't know. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything I can do to help, but I'll just keep my mouth shut and move on. But when people were talking to you about this, did you find yourself in this position where they were like, can you help me? Did you get any of that kind of thing or just you helped me?
I think it was more you helped. I didn't think people came to me for further assistance.
No, they didn't.
Which was wise.
Yeah.
It was just people who had lost a parent or had lost a loved one to the same way kind of felt like that helped them through the grieving process. So that was cool.
For the book, did you do any research? Did you read Kubler Ross? Did you go through the five stages? Did you do some homework or anything?
No, I just researched my own feelings. And I actually took a ton of notes when my dad was dying.
Really?
Yeah. And so I kind of was like, oh, yeah, that thing. So I just kept going back to those, 2 weeks.
Like real notes, like diary type of notes?
Yeah.
Like feelings journal?
No. Just like things that were happening that I thought I would forget. You know, when it's happening, you're like, I'll never forget this. It's imprinted on my DNA. And then, 3 years later, you read it, you're like, oh, yeah, that night that he wanted something that was orange.
Yeah.
And that was all he could tell me. And so I started just searching through the house and bringing him things that were orange, like books and, pill bottles and stuff. And he would just shake his head. And I finally figured out it was this orange tumbler that was not of any significance to him as far as I knew.
Right.
But he wanted to drink water out of that tumbler.
And this is like his brain is going at that point?
Yeah. And yeah, they go to weird places. And he became obsessed with this a wagon wheel chandelier that none of us had ever heard of that he wanted us to find. And apparently it was in the attic and the previous owner of the house had left it. And we'd never heard him talk about it for 40 years. And then all of a sudden it was like one of the things he was obsessed about in the last days of his life.
And
he's like, what is this thing? Why do you care about it?
And he found it?
No, never found it.
But he said it was upstairs?
Yeah, he did. Now, maybe he meant a different upstairs, but he was very specific about it being in the attic. And there was a separate attic over the garage.
Yeah.
And by the time the house was emptied out and my mom had moved out, I just didn't feel like going into the garage attic. And I thought, I'll just leave it there for the next dying owner to obsess
about. To find the magic wagon wheel?
Yes.
I hope it wasn't what was going to cure him.
Oh my God, the tumor breaker.
Yeah, the tumor breaker wagon wheel. Maybe he knew that's all it would take.
Oh my God,
no.
And he couldn't tell me. And just he had this little, my sister, when you go to Walgreens or something, they have like little flowers for sale. Like they look like cactuses that are going to die. Those are just like tiny little baby flowers.
Yeah.
And she bought him one. And I guess, smell is the last sense to go. So he just kept bringing it to his nose and inhaling it and, putting it down.
Oh my God.
It was the last things he could do.
Yeah.
Were sort of.
What kind of cancer did he have again?
He had lung cancer.
And it just went all over and your brain goes from all the drugs and the cancer.
Yes. And he had radiation and stuff. So to prevent it from going to the brain, which is, I think kind of hurt his ability to think, but it also kept it from going to the brain, which is great. Because I think when it goes to the brain, sometimes people get, their emotions change a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that's tougher than just a regular powering
down. Oh, they become emotionally different people.
Yeah. And
he
didn't become different. He just became, he was also high on morphine, of course. That could explain everything, but,
Yeah. The loopiness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the just obsessions with things we hadn't heard of. Yeah.
Yeah. And but they sort of return to childlike behavior.
Yeah,
right?
Totally. And you're taking care of your parents and you're diapering them and you're doing all the things they did for you. And, it's a special time if you can get it.
Yeah.
You're lucky enough to be around them when they're dying.
Yeah. I got to be honest with you. I don't want it. I don't like. I just hope, God forbid, it happens, which I imagine it will, and I'll be alive for it. That it's quick, and I just have to show up to say a few words. Yeah.
You mean you've got 6 hours to get there, and you get there at 5:45?
Or just like he's gone. Oh, what happened?
Oh, don't want even a last conversation?
Nah, I'm good.
That's how I feel about my mom. I feel like I've learned nothing from my dad's death. I would just like to do my dad's death over a little bit, but my mom, I'm like, oh, hurry up. Like, you've been around plenty. I get you. You're not changing. You're whatever you are, you're just becoming more of, and I'm done.
That's the worst.
It is the worst, because I think I will feel guilty when she actually does die, but I can't seem to pretend. I can't seem to learn that lesson in advance be kinder to her just forgive her for voting for Trump or, all the things that drive me nuts.
Right.
I can't seem to
do
right now.
I'll
do it at her. I know I'll do it at her grave and I'll be crying, but.
I wonder, like my parents, they didn't get worse. They both got better.
Oh.
Somehow. Like they both, they softened up. They became a little less selfish. My mother's a little more complimentary and sort of supportive in a way that she wasn't. She goes out of her way to say things like, I'm proud of you, I love you, like nothing. I didn't get a lot of that.
Interesting.
And my dad just sort of gone soft somehow. He was always sort of up and down, but now he's just, they leveled off. And, whatever was threatening and horrible and kind of annoying about them is just a little tempered.
Do you feel kind of angry at your mom for not giving you that when you really needed it?
I guess, but like, I don't know if I feel angry at her. I just it's hard. How it really manifests itself is like she wants to come out. Like, so I'm going to fly her out.
Yeah.
She wants to come out. And I really don't understand why. You're like... Like she wants to see me, whatever. But I'm like, why 4 days? I mean, can't we just in and out this thing? Like, can't we?
That is an in and out. What are you talking about? My mother lives with me. 4 days. Oh my God. I would dance for a month if that was my.
I don't want to hurt her feelings, but it's like after a day or two, I'm like, we kind of did everything. We caught up. I took you over to the Bloomingdale's, whatever.
She probably wants to go shopping for you. She's probably going to fill your cupboards with food and do some laundry.
You got the wrong mom.
She doesn't do that.
I didn't get that one. God forbid she tries to cook anything.
She's not going to fold your underpants and put them in the wrong drawer.
No. I don't. She might buy me a shirt that I never wear. But it'll be fine. I guess I should appreciate it more.
Yeah.
And I'll go out and see my dad, but I swear to God, like in New Mexico, but like really a day is, I'm good.
Yeah.
A full day, by the end of that day, I'm like, all right, okay, I guess we're all caught up.
Yeah.
You okay?
It sucks because when they actually are gone, you're going to want that day back.
Really?
But you don't want it when you have it. It's awful.
Maybe I'm a terrible person. I don't know. I can't. And I know it's something's coming.
Yeah. How old are your parents?
6 months.
Listeners note, he's counting on his fingers right now.
I don't know. How do you do math again?
I'll ask my son. He has Common Core word problems every day
How often do you have your son? All the time?
Yeah. During the week. Yeah, like I don't have him today. So
and like in so your mom lives with you guys?
Yeah.
How long's that been going on?
A year and a half. I've been in a bad mood for 18 months.
My mom's 77.
Okay.
Is that possible?
Yeah. Is she in good health?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she might have another decade with her, so there's no rush to be loving. But
my dad's gonna be 80 this year.
Yeah.
Wow.
80s when I remember my dad getting really elderly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know why I assume, like, of course they're running out of steam a little bit.
It's hard to imagine these people that were so big and domineering in your life start to become brittle and frail.
Yeah.
And then they just disappear, but they actually do. And
now I'm getting sad. Now I'm thinking about it. Now
yeah.
I'm getting sad.
I guess. It's impossible to appreciate them when they're here the way you will when they're gone. And there's no way to change it, I think.
No.
I
don't know. Some people, I guess. Do you know people that are like that? I don't know. That are like, I just love my parents and I cherish every moment I'm with them. And And everything is great.
I think I have a few Facebook friends like that, and they enrage me. Like, you aren't telling the truth. There's no way.
There's something wrong with you're hiding something.
You are. Stop
you're
it.
You're a repressive weirdo.
You're posting who you wish you were, not who you were.
Do they respond to that? Do you tell them that?
No, I just think that inside, and I wonder if I'm doing it all wrong.
So, like, in the close of the book, I mean, do you, like, because do you find, how many essays are in the book?
Ooh, maybe like 50. Again, they're really short. They're like quick. They're like almost stand-up bits, basically.
Uh-huh. You know, just, are they all funny or no?
They're not all funny. Some of it's weird. When I wrote a parenting book, it's pretty much all funny. And I guess it's because I have a kid and I know he's going to read it one day and he's still here. And then when I was writing about my dad, it was like, God, he's a real guy and he's dead and I'm actually might be the final word on him.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more daunting to
write
about a person's life when they're not there to, you know, counteract it or to say, well, you know, not exactly.
Yeah,
or to
right.
just live a different way and
right.
prove you wrong.
So is there questionable stuff in there where you're like, I don't know if he'd like that.
The only thing I'm worried about is of the family that I write about reading it, but they're very unsupportive, so I don't think they will read it.
Whose family?
There's a certain side of the family that there's the people that I'm talking about probably won't read it, so it's
right.
okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of thought that when I wrote about my dad, and then it caused a little bit of a wildfire.
Oh no!
Over there in that side of the family.
Oh.
Yeah. His side of the family. You know, that was what was funny. It's like, I was honest, but, you know, I could see how he could feel a little hurt or betrayed by my honesty.
Right, right, right.
But apparently there was, like, you know, his uncles, the old guard of the Marin clan.
Sure.
Were sort of, like, disappointed with me, and he was hanging that over me. Like, you know, I talked to my Uncle Phil. They were not very happy. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
Well, Phil Maron's got to protect his name.
Well, he's passed. I didn't, but it wasn't about Phil. It was about my dad.
Oh,
so
right,
he was
right.
sort of rallying his troops on me. Like,
right.
you know, you're not welcome. And I'm like, oh, really? Thank you. Do me a favor. And then it all passes.
Yeah.
You know, you apologize and whatever.
Right.
Everything's
right.
intense in the moment.
Yeah, I guess so.
So, but that's not the case here.
I don't think so.
He's not going to, you didn't.
There's a couple of cousins that might be upset, but. And but it's already a rough Thanksgiving, given the political, you know,
still
fracture
yeah.
in the family. So
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, just with between Trump.
You've got that?
Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And they're still happy about it?
I would imagine so, especially since the tax cuts and stuff.
That's what they were hoping for.
I think
tax
so.
Tax cuts for corporations.
Right. My cousins are corporations.
Oh, that's wild. Interesting.
Pfizer is a first cousin.
Oh, that's no. wild. They're just thrilled that those corporations are going to get the break they deserve.
I don't even know that the tax thing benefits them, but the idea that it will
sure.
when they become
yeah.
incredibly wealthy
it's all about those
from
ideas.
The lottery ticket,
sure.
well.
Yeah, all about those ideas, those angry ideas that make you feel good.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, who my dad voted for. I know who my mom voted for, but I've avoided, there's a part of me that I think I used to go down to my mother's for Thanksgiving, but generally I've been shooting for the last few years. It's hard for me to get down there.
Yeah.
But there is a contingent in that crew that goes to that dinner.
Sure.
That are, you know, just like, you know, Trump supporters, Jewish Trump supporters.
Oh my God, it never makes sense to me.
Yeah. And the Zionist element or the business element or just,
sure.
There's plenty of Republican Jews.
I know, but like my son is Hispanic and my grandmother, my mother voted for Trump. I'm like, how could you? After what he said about Mexicans, how can you set my son up for that kind of taunting or bullying?
I don't know I don't know what that disconnect is. I don't think they add it all up.
No, they don't.
They just go with their feelings.
Yep.
And you know, and maybe policy will sync up with that. But
yeah.
you know, like I don't know where that drop off is, where you don't see that it's exacerbating
right.
intolerance, and you just still sort of like, yeah, but you know, it's good for the country.
Yeah.
Is it? My son's crying.
I'm grateful that my dad died before Donald Trump was even a candidate, because I can kind of think, well, maybe he's one of the Mitt Romney. Maybe my dad would have been a never Trumper, because
right.
Trump is so vulgar, and that's just not.
But you don't know.
I don't know.
He did us all a favor.
He did.
You can write a book.
I'm glad I didn't find that chandelier. They would have cured him because he died at the right time.
You have nice love for him.
I do. It's very pure. Yeah. It's not, you know.
God, if he had lived into January, might have just all no book, no movie.
He has Dinesh D'Souza books. So I'm like, oh, it's
could've
possible.
Went. Oh, God.
But I'll never know.
You were spared.
I was.
Thanks for talking.
Sure.
Okay. All right. So you got it? Dead People Suck, a guide for survivors of the newly departed. Sounds helpful and funny. Tough times. Grief is difficult. And we're all feeling a bit of it. Are we not? I think I'm going to read this email only because like it's sort of eating at me because I don't... I've talked about it a bit. But... I don't know if it's talked about enough. This is from Steven. Subject line, BDD. Mark, how do you deal with your body dysmorphia? When those thoughts come and I feel like I've eaten too much, regardless of how small my meals are, and my brain tells me my body instantly changed for the worse, and then the guilt, and then I'm preoccupied with the idea that starvation is a valid option the rest of the day. What the fuck? How do you deal with it? Anyway, maybe I'll go find a chat room or a forum or something. Have a great day, Steven. Hey, Steven, buddy. Here's the deal with that. And I don't know how many men really suffer from this shit. There is a sort of shame to it. There's shame on top of the shame because to be a dude with a sort of body dysmorphia or a milder extreme eating disorder, it just you feel like you really got to keep that stuff in the closet. But I do suffer from insane body dysmorphia and kind of a weird eating, a very shitty relationship with food, as some of you know. And it ebbs and flows. And I just read something, a transcript of something I did on stage years ago that's going to be in the Risk book. There's just something about wanting to feel shitty, wanting to be hard on yourself. If you have a brain that's always going to look for a reason to be hard on yourself, it's going to do it one way or the other. And around eating, my ex-wife used to say, hey, look, in terms of that problem, whether it's overeating or compulsive eating or denying yourself food, is that the bottom line is unlike drugs or alcohol or gambling or debting, you got to eat and you got to figure out a way to accept eating and you can't beat yourself up too much for eating. There's a consistency to body shame that I think sometimes for me, it happens when I'm anxious or I'm full of dread or I have too much time on my hands or things are going well. That's a very easy way to get myself back into a pattern of self-judgment. Whereas like, look, if you eat something shitty, you know, exercise, don't eat shitty the next day, you know, try to, you know, keep a healthy diet. I mean, I eat pretty healthily, but I know the feeling and I'm sort of in it right now. And I appreciate your email. I don't know if there are forums or, you know, you can go to meetings of some kind, OA maybe. I knew a guy when I used to talk about this, I knew this guy, Mitch. You know, I said, how do you not go crazy? Because when I was first getting sober, I would eat, you know, I've gone through periods of ice cream or sugar. Fortunately for me, you know, I have slightly high cholesterol, so that's made it sort of the impending doom element of eating certain things has stifled my behavior a little bit, which has helped out. But you shouldn't take that. But this dude, Mitch, he said, I would never have an eating disorder because I eat the exact same thing every day. I know that doesn't mix it up much, but maybe you should get into some get involved with some sort of monitoring. Because that's like a whole other thing. Instead of just winging it and, you know, feeling randomly guilty about eating things when, you know, you just, who knows how your day is going, you know, get on Weight Watchers or something. Do something to sort of like engage you mathematically where you're just, you know, working on the tables, like, you know, sort of like counting those points or whatever the system is, you know, and stretching them out. That way you'll feel proactive in your food obsession. Maybe try that. But I don't know. I feel fucking chubby. Look, I'll admit that even if I'm not heavy, which I'm usually not, there's too much of me. There's definitely too much of me. So that I don't feel like I'm wrong there. And I feel like there's many people that would validate that. Just too much of Mark. One way or the other, on some level, there's too much. So, Ricky Lindholm, you might know her from Garfunkel and Oates, the lovely Kate Micucci and Ricky do a comedy music duo, and they seem to be working together again. I guess I never stopped, but I talked to her a little bit about that. But now she's here talking about the third season of her show, Another Period, which is on Comedy Central Tuesday nights at 10:30, 9:30 Central. I also talked to Natasha Leggero about this, who I love. But we talked about other stuff. It's a well-rounded chat. This is me and Ricky Lindholm. Is that good?
Can I turn this down just a teeny bit?
Oh, you've had enough of me already?
Just, I have like super hearing.
Is that good?
That's great, yeah.
That's better?
Yeah, that's much better.
You have super hearing?
Yeah, kind of.
But I mean, is it like sensitive? I mean, does it hurt your head?
No. I just, just have good hearing.
How's your vision?
It's great. Yeah.
Is that because, it's genetic? Are you like an Aryan person?
I think so, yeah. I think I'm the dream Aryan.
Yeah, what is it? I mean, like, what is it? Swedish?
Swedish, English, and Irish. I thought I was
That's pretty tough.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have people in your family that are, like, from those countries? Or is it too far back?
From Sweden, but not currently, like, everyone's dead who's from there. But I think my great-grandparents were from Sweden both sides.
You didn't know anybody.
I didn't know anyone, no.
Yeah.
No.
So, wait, tell me about this moving every 2 years. Hold on a minute. I think I'm going to get a water over there.
Okay.
Everything's a little disheveled. I want to applaud your courage in going to the bathroom with the window out and workmen around.
Uh-huh.
That was I thought that was pretty courageous.
I felt okay. Yeah. I've gone in worse places.
Well, that's the thing I always realize when I have fancy people over, is that like I'm worried about how dirty my bathroom is, and I'm like, they're actors, they're comedians. They've like they've had a life. They've been to clubs.
Yeah, everyone's been to a porta potty. I've gone to a porta potty wearing a jumpsuit, which I would not recommend.
Oh my God.
Because you have to take it all off.
And, where was this? At a festival?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just like, I shouldn't have.
Like bumper shoot or something?
Where was it? It was.
At the FYI Fest or something?
Like, I think it was that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
FYF?
I don't know what it is.
Whatever.
Is it, was it the music festival or the comedy festival?
It was the music festival in LA.
The one down there that you take the train to? Like,
yes.
Right? Oh,
it's
yeah.
Like
yeah.
In a field.
Right. And they had a comedy tent.
Yes.
That was terrible.
Yes. Or was it? I don't remember.
Did you perform?
Yeah.
Who, you and Kate?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't like the festivals. I don't like doing. I don't think it's a good venue for comedy. I'm happy they have us there, but it's never. I don't like a bunch of standing people.
I was
going to
say comedy is bad when you're standing.
I just can't take it. Maybe I'm too old for that shit.
No, because when people stand, they think they can talk. And when they're sitting, they know to be quiet. It's like we're just conditioned that way.
Well, yeah, but standing always feels like you're just waiting.
Yeah,
you know, like you're not locked in. You're just sort of like, what's the next song? What's going to happen now?
Yeah,
it bothers me.
I don't like standing at shows.
I just got a feeling of nervousness.
Really?
Well, yeah, because I just whenever I do those kind of festivals or audiences, I'm like, this is going to suck going in. Like I'm standing there, I'm like, this will only be good despite the fact that it's going to be bad.
Yeah,
like the baseline is this is difficult.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think you go to hang out with friends and,
I
feel like the only
I find that's less appealing.
Real conversations I've had with you were at a music festival.
I don't know that we've ever had a real conversation. I don't know why that is.
I feel like I had a conversation with you at, Bonnaroo.
Oh, that was another horrible situation. Mm-hmm. But that one, they claim that one's better because it's air conditioned and it's indoors.
Yeah, but
it's more like a circus tent.
Yeah, that one was... It was so, I was so hot. I just stayed in the comedy tent all day.
It's the worst. We had a real conversation?
Yeah, we did. We almost went and got chicken.
Oh, I went.
Oh, you did?
Sure, I went. Who did I take that time from? I think me and Kinane went.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, I tried to get you to go get chicken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was down, but then no one would go with us.
And what, we bailed?
Yeah, we bailed.
Oh, I must have went the next night.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Were you there with Kate again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, my God. That was like, how long ago was that?
Oh, so long ago.
Was it that long?
8 years ago or something? Or I don't know. I'm really bad with time. I really am. I don't.
But you do a show based on time.
I know. I know.
But that's a very specific period.
Yeah, it's 1902.
All right, wait. Let's go back to this moving every 2 months. How long have you lived? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up, I moved every year until I was in fourth grade. And then we stayed in this little town called Portville, which is like 2 hours south of Buffalo.
In New York? Upstate New York?
Yeah, like a town of 1,000 people. You know, very Republican, white. Yeah, it might as well be Midwest.
Yeah, how'd you end up there?
My dad is an oil and gas lawyer, and we sort of moved.
Oil and gas lawyer.
Yeah, and an entrepreneur. He always is opening businesses that I don't totally understand. Yeah.
Like what?
He'll be like, I have a timber business. I'm like, okay.
That's it? You don't investigate any further than that?
Not when I was little. He'd be like, I'm doing title work. And I'm like, that sounds good, Dad. You know,
title work.
Whatever.
I know. For years, when you're a kid, when you see a sign for title company, it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
They just name things?
And you just don't. Investigate. My dad wore a suit and he went to work and we moved every year.
And it was his own title company.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah.
Every year he moved. Are you sure he wasn't on the run?
Oh, I don't know.
Is he still around?
Yeah, he's still around. Both my parents are still around.
Oh, that's good.
They're still together.
And they're still together. How many siblings do you have?
One brother and a half sister.
Half sister? Mm-hmm. How'd that happen?
My dad got a woman pregnant in high school.
Really?
Yeah.
And he you have a relationship? He took the kid? How did it all work?
She ended up staying with her mom.
Yeah.
And her mom, you know, married this lovely guy and they raised her. And then me and my brother, you know, had my parents.
Right. But you have a relationship with the half-sister?
Yeah.
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 That's odd. I guess it's not odd. It's fairly normal. But like when did you realize that you had this half-sister? All the way through? Or
no, I was eight or nine. I got really excited that I had a sister and she was older. She was like, you know, 15. So she was cool. She was babysitter age.
Really?
So she was like cool older babysitter.
Yeah,
age,
yeah.
I thought that was awesome.
That's sort of wild though. Like, you know, you get that surprise. I guess when you're eight, it just seems like an extra added good thing.
Totally.
But like when you're 15, it's like, well, how did I not know this?
Yeah. I think it was much more emotional for her than it was for me and my brother.
Yeah.
I think we felt fine about
it. Did she know though all along?
No, she had just found out.
Oh my God. Did she just find out that he was her father?
Yeah, or? I think so.
Oh my God.
Well, it's weird. My family's not that open about stuff, so I'm not exactly sure what the story is.
Really?
I'm not. Yeah, yeah. We don't talk about a lot of things.
Is that a Swedish thing? What is that?
I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's Swedish thing or just my family, but
really?
We sort of gloss over a lot of things and I'm just like, oh, okay, I guess what happened.
I think that's normal. I think like with all families, you end up more gets revealed as time goes on, as secrets become sort of exhausted. You know what I mean? Like I find that when my parents, as they get older, they tell you things, you're like, what? And they're like, oh, you didn't know that? I'm like, how would I know that?
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know any of that.
And But put it back in your mouth.
But I always felt like I was missing something. Like I knew that I didn't know stuff.
Yeah.
And I would get mad at them and I didn't know why. And
yeah.
I'd say stuff like, you don't understand me.
Yeah.
Or what? I just felt like an emotional.
Right. They were hiding something. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you get along with them?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
So where'd you go? Where'd you end up? What's the journey to show business? So you're in upstate New York. You're outside of Buffalo. Is that what you told me?
In a town of 1,000 people.
Oh my God. How far outside of Buffalo?
Like an hour and a half, 2 hours, depending on the snow.
Well, that's not like right outside of Buffalo. Where the hell? You must have been closer to something else. That was the closest city.
No, that
Buffalo?
Was the closest mall, closest airport.
What about Albany? How far is Albany?
Albany's 5 hours.
Oh man.
Yeah.
I gotta look at it. I forget how big New York is.
It's enormous. Yeah. We're like 7 hours from the city.
But are you close to Canada?
Yeah, 2 hours.
Well, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Did you go to Canada?
We would go once a year to Toronto to see musical theater. You know,
that's important.
Phantom or something. Yeah, it was the best day of my life.
Because I was closer than New York City.
Yes.
No shit. Mm-hmm.
I didn't see a Broadway play till I was, you know, 23 or something.
So Toronto was the cultural outlet. Buffalo, you know, is limited.
Yes, it is. So I went to college for 3 years. I went to Syracuse. And that was just, I was just kind of depressed in college. It kind of just is a blip, and I don't really focus on it or remember it.
But wait, did you go to Niagara Falls a lot?
Yeah, a couple times.
Isn't that by Buffalo?
Yeah, but it was sort of like a two-hour journey in the snow, and once you go there once, you know, we didn't leave the town too much.
1,000 people?
1,000 people.
How many people in your high school?
There's probably 1,000 people in my high school, but it was K through 12 in one building, and it was for a bunch of towns. So
wait, 1,000 people in the whole high school?
In the whole, yeah, in kindergarten through 12.
In the whole, what, kindergarten through 12?
Mm-hmm, in one building.
So you're with the same people your whole life?
Yeah, yeah.
That is wild.
It's weird, yeah.
Are you friends with any of them?
A couple. Not too
but
many.
Like, so you got there when you were like six, so those were the people.
I was 10, 9 or 10 when I got there.
So 10 through 17, you're just, those are the people.
That was it, yeah. But I was expecting to leave just because we'd moved every year until then.
What kept them there?
I guess the business went well.
The title business?
Yeah.
Or the timber business?
I don't know. Oil and gas?
Right. Oil and gas law.
Yeah.
But he was a lawyer.
Yes.
Okay. At the bottom of it all, he was a lawyer.
Right.
And he's not in jail, so you have to assume.
So I'm assuming it was.
Is he retired?
Semi.
And what about your mother?
My mom works for my dad. She used to be a professor, a college professor doing computers science stuff. And now she works for my dad.
General computer science stuff. Yeah. Back when that was a class.
Yeah.
Computer science.
Yeah, exactly.
Learning how to do, what was that language?
DOS.
Yeah.
Floppy disks.
Yeah. Loading stuff in. Mm-hmm. That was the language that you had to learn. I couldn't wrap my brain around it.
I couldn't either.
I was in college. I took the computer class because I had to take something as an elective or whatever. Had the book. I'm like, no way. Mm-mm. Not happening.
No, but my mom taught it, and I don't know. She was the only woman in the computer department of any of the, you know, in her.
What was the other language? It was DOS and something else. You can't remember how. I don't want to ask.
I don't remember.
It doesn't matter.
Old I am?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm 38.
Yeah, so you're okay with talking about how old you are?
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah, you can Google it.
I know, yeah. But still, it's still like it's still in my brain. Now, is that like? Is it still inappropriate to ask women how old they are, or is that okay now?
I don't know. I'm okay with it. I'm pretty okay with anything.
Cherry Coke. That's a Cherry Coke sweatshirt?
Yeah, it is.
Is that gone? It's gone, isn't it?
I don't know.
I remember how exciting it was when Cherry Coke came out. Wasn't it so good?
But it tastes a little bit like Robitussin.
That's true.
That's the only problem with it.
All right. So you're growing up, one through your kindergarten through 12 with the same people. So you'd have you'd date boys and then you'd see them grow old.
I suppose so.
Have you gone back to a reunion?
No, I don't go to reunions. I just kind of leave things in the past and just move forward.
All right. So are you acting in high school?
Our drama department got canceled after my freshman year. I think we ran out of funding.
What?
So So that got canceled.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't do that. And I wanted to. I loved musicals and stuff. But, you know, it's a poor town.
So it didn't happen?
No. We got a scoreboard. Maybe the money went in there. I don't know. But
they canceled the drama department.
Yeah.
Before you got to do anything.
Yeah. Or no, I did a play my freshman year, and then it got canceled.
Oh.
So, you
what,
know,
what play?
Man of La Mancha.
Oh sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you.
It was Antonia. Or no. Yeah. Is that,
it's a pretty big production for a small school.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's not that hard to get. It's kind of in my school. You know, everyone kind of gets in. It just depends on how big the part is.
Who sang "Dream the Impossible Dream"? Wasn't that from that show?
My boyfriend at the time.
Oh yeah. He was a singer.
Yeah. I was dating the lead in the play.
I'd love to see pictures of you and the boyfriend.
Oh gosh.
In freshman year or whatever.
Yeah. He was
doing Man of La
Mancha. He was a senior and I was a freshman.
It's so funny. You really think you're pulling it off, you know, like when you do the grown-up parts. When you're in it in high school or junior high, you're like, I'm getting by. I'm passing.
Really good. Yeah.
And then you see pictures. You're like, I'm like a kid.
This was ridiculous.
So ridiculous.
Yeah.
and the parents just look at you like, oh, that was so good. They know.
But you think it's like actually good.
I think that's really the one thing we should thank adults for. Generally, if they're good adults, they don't tell us how ridiculous we actually look. And they're just sort of like, find it sweet.
I think that's a good parent.
Yeah, that just like, you don't look like a grown-up.
Right.
This is just still, it's silly that you're doing this play. They're like, that was good.
Man, I wanted to do plays, though.
But you go to Toronto and you saw shows in high school, so you, like, that what planted the seed?
Yeah. Mm. We would see, you know, Phantom of the Opera or Miss Saigon or one of these kind of, whatever was playing.
Oh, yeah.
Any sort
Miss
of
Saigon.
Show. Yeah.
Did you like Toronto? Toronto's a good town.
Yeah. We would just go for the night, but I
just for one
it.
Night.
Yeah.
And you, okay, so you go to college in Syracuse.
Yes.
How far is that from wherever the hell?
That's like 3 hours from where I'm from.
How big is New York?
It's enormous.
Oh, my God.
Syracuse is on the way to Albany.
Right, because Troy and Albany are close.
Yes.
Right.
I believe so.
Yes, they are. Gosh, they're not that far.
Yeah.
They're not that far. Right.
Yeah.
Beautiful theater in Troy. I played at. It was built in the 1800s.
Ooh, nice.
And people go to record classical music there because the acoustics are so perfect. And you go to, I can't remember the name of the theater, but it was like, just the acoustics are spectacular.
Really? I did not know that.
Oh, it was astounding. So.
So yeah, I was just kind of dying to get out of my
And
town.
What was the you go to Syracuse.
So I went to Syracuse. Like I thought I was going to go to Harvard. Like I just really thought that was going to happen. And then
did you get straight A's and shit?
Yeah, I was like Little Miss class president.
Oh really?
Kind of person. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
that makes sense.
I was just I was like such an overachiever. I made my first sort of to-do list, like life to-do list, when I was 12.
Yeah,
and I decided that I was going to an Ivy League school. And,
oh yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. But I didn't do any of the homework.
Oh, I did all the homework. It just didn't work out. I didn't get in, and then
how did you not get in with straight A's?
I don't know. I don't know.
Where'd you apply?
Everywhere that was in Ivy League.
Oh really?
Yeah.
All of them? All 12 or 13 of them?
Yeah, whatever.
Not
many.
One.
Nope. Nowhere. Yeah.
What the fuck happened?
I don't know.
That doesn't seem fair. Who wrote your letters for you? What did you have to Couldn't they? Yeah. Just teachers. I'm sorry.
I'm over it. But but so I went to Syracuse and I don't know. College. I was just kind of depressed in college. I just kind of moved past it. And then I
so you were class president and then you went to college and you just
and
went
I did
into
nothing.
A dark
yeah.
period.
Yeah.
You had no traction.
I had no traction.
You're a big shot. Now you're just lost.
And then I was, yeah, in a sea of
people just
30,000
like
sports fans.
Oh, sports fans.
Kind of, yeah. And I was like, where am I?
You didn't find
doing?
The nerds?
I did find the nerds. It just, yeah. It took
were they all sad too and dark?
No, I don't think so.
Did you go there for 4 years?
I was there for 5 semesters. And then I did my
5 semesters. That's 2.5 years.
And then I did 1 semester in England. And so, and I just graduated early. I just plowed through it.
Oh, really? You took all the necessary classes to graduate early?
Yeah.
So you're sad and depressed in Syracuse, mm-hmm. and it snows there, and you're yeah. under snow for a long time. And did you have a sad, depressed boyfriend?
No, I didn't date anyone in college.
Nobody. Did you do any shows?
No.
You did nothing.
Well, I did. Okay, let me.
You're getting straight A's. You're getting straight A's again.
I'm forgetting. I did do a show. I was in the chorus of a musical my freshman year.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was getting probably straight A's like around that. I'm good at tests. Like.
Yeah.
Not necessary. Doesn't necessarily help you in life, but I was good at school.
Yeah. It didn't. You don't think it helped you in life?
Not really. Like not. I mean, I don't think anyone cares.
Not in the life you chose.
Right. Right,
it might have helped you in some other life.
I guess.
Yeah. But so you just did the chorus. So you were just a girl in the background.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Being sad.
Yeah.
But singing.
Just
sad
being,
and singing in the
sad
background.
And waiting for my life to start.
Well,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you don't know what you're going to do. And then feel lost. And, mm-hmm. you know, ugh. So what made you go to England? You just like that? Maybe that would help?
Well, because you could see plays. You could. There was courses where you could go to a bunch of. You went to plays like 2 or 3 times a week.
Oh, so it was a drama exchange program mm-hmm. kind of thing?
Yeah.
But you just signed up for that? That was the focus was, it was a short exchange program with yes. a drama focus?
Yes, and it was amazing.
And you go see Shakespeare and go mm-hmm. see stuff in the West End mm-hmm. and that kind of stuff?
And I was just like, oh my God, this is the best thing in the world. And
that
I,
was it?
I huh? loved it, yeah. And I was like, well, I have to do this.
Did you like England?
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
I really did. It was like, it helped me sort of like start to get out of my depression.
Darkness, mm-hmm. of the darkness. Mm-hmm. Were you on medication? Were you
not until 10 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, cause I don't know if you've
what?
Dealt with medication kind of stuff, but it's like trial and error. And
but like you managed a certain amount of coming, you know, kind of like depression here and there for mm-hmm. that for decades.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, and then I tried different SSRIs and things, and nothing was really working, or I had side effects. And then I was like, I'm going to try one last thing, and I tried this medication, and my whole life changed in 2 weeks.
And that's the one you're on now?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. It was just like...
Which one?
Wellbutrin.
Oh, Wellbutrin was it?
Yeah.
Out of all of them, it's a classic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wellbutrin.
And it was just like, oh, I'm back to myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my... So, like, okay, well, we'll get to... You know,
I never want to go off it.
I think I took it once for, I think it was the same. I think Wellbutrin and Xantex were the same. I took Wellbutrin briefly. It was kind of, it jacked me up a little too much. I think it was, I don't take anything and I haven't in a long time, but I remember trying Wellbutrin mm-hmm. to stop smoking.
Oh yeah, it's supposed to be good for that. I don't know why, but.
Well, yeah, I think Xantex or whatever that name of that non-smoking pill, I think is basically Wellbutrin.
Okay.
It's the same pill.
Right.
All right, so. So you get all juiced up in England to do theater.
Mm-hmm.
What did you see there? Did you go to Shakespeare? Did you go to, what do you call it? Stratford-upon-Avon.
Yeah.
Stratford-upon-Avon.
Yeah, I went there and, you know, to, you know, all the, you know, the Old Vic and just everything. And I got really excited. And I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I knew I wanted to be part of it.
So you saw classics, you mm-hmm. saw Shakespeare, and then you saw modern theater.
Yes.
They mixed it up for you.
Yes.
And they took care of all the bookings and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good program.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I was just so excited.
You remember where you were living in England?
I think I lived on Baker Street, like near the Sherlock Holmes Museum or whatever. Like,
yeah. I was there for a month on an exchange program and it was a dark.
Did you like it?
I don't know. I you know, like you get me away from things that I'm comfortable with and like just, I lose sense of who I am. Even if I go onto the road, if the hotel's not properly positioned near humans, I'm sort of like, ah.
You get lonely? Or
I don't know if it's lonely. I'm literally sort of like, do I exist? What is happening? It's weird.
I feel,
because I remember I was in high school when I went on the exchange program. It was only for a month. It was a summer thing. And everyone else in the program had already been at college. Like, I was going into my freshman year of college, and they were all sort of sophomores. So they were already sort of like, no, look at this kid.
Right. They'd already been away from home.
Right. Yeah. And I was, you know, this outsider just because I was young. And I just remember, like, not really connecting with a lot of people and wandering around by myself. And then you just start to feel invisible and weird.
That's always the worst.
Do you know that feeling?
Yes, I do. Yeah, it's to San Francisco right after college, and I had a very hard time making friends. And I was also
depressed.
That's
a rough city, though. Yeah.
But I felt invisible, and I wasn't there very long. I had to just leave.
It's a little brutal, because so much of that city is about sort of, like, bullying your identity. Like, you know, like, so much about San Francisco, the weird kind of, like, homeless people are very well-defined. Mm-hmm. Everybody's very well-defined in a certain way.
Yeah, and I felt a little blank.
Yeah, it's a horrible place to feel blank.
Yeah.
As San Francisco is. It's horrible to feel blank anywhere, mm-hmm. but that place, it can be kind of harsh, because it's not a very sympathetic city if you don't know who you are.
Yeah. God, that's so well put. Yeah.
It seems to make sense. It seems a lot of people are coming into themselves, but they're aggressive or something. I lived there for like a couple years on and off.
Oh, that's right.
And I could never really get a handle on it.
I couldn't get a foothold there. I don't usually have a hard time making friends, and I just didn't make any.
So you just went there blind?
I went there to go to an acting program for the summer, and then sort of stayed there for a few months after.
Which acting program?
ACT.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That was downtown, like on Mason or mm-hmm. somewhere. Like, it was right across from the Improv. There was an Improv there. ACT was around there, I remember.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was sort of by Union Square or somewhere.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I took acting classes in San Francisco with Sherry Carlson, but I don't know. It's an odd place, man. So you come back
It's funny, though, because I was taking classes there, and I played guitar, and this other girl who's in my class, we wrote some funny song, and we played it at the final show.
Yeah, yeah.
And of course, it did not occur to me to pursue that at all. I was like, now I'm going to pursue classical acting. And, you know, my scene was fine.
Yeah.
But the song was a total hit. And I was like, well, I'm going to ignore that.
Ignore that, the fun part.
Yes. I'm going to ignore the part that went really well.
Serious.
Yes.
That's so weird, because when I was in England at that program, I did a song with some other guy.
Really?
Like, we wrote a funny song for the thing at the end.
So funny.
And then the last night, like, everyone's like, hey, you're pretty cool. I'm like, nah, fuck
thanks,
off.
Yeah. You're like, I was the whole time.
But I don't know if my memory's right, though. Do you think, can you trust your memory? Do you think you're
I don't trust my memory at all.
Like, you were as, like, shitty as you thought you were, like, in terms of sadness and all that? Do you really think you were that disconnected?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't trust my memory.
So you come back from England, you had a good mm-hmm. time, and then you tell your parents, who are clearly supportive, that you're going to go to San Francisco.
Yes.
To go to ACT, specifically for that. So you had somewhere to go. You weren't just going to be like, I'm just going to get an apartment.
No, I wasn't brave enough yet. But I went to San Francisco and got my bravery up.
What did you learn at ACT? Did you stay for the whole time? It was just a summer program?
It was like a couple month long program. It was great. You learn sort of basics of everything.
Yeah.
Because I'd never done acting school. So you learn, Alexander technique. And
yeah. What is that again? My friend does
that. It's the
thing
where you relax your back. Like, there's like a mantra neck be free so my back can lengthen and widen and my head can go forward and down.
Right.
Sort of this mantra that you say to yourself.
Do you find that helps you into your current state?
Yeah, I think so.
You've integrated it?
I think I have.
So that was really your first go at that?
Yes. I hadn't really taken acting classes before.
You just went and watched theater in London?
Yes. So it was a slow burn. And then I was like, I'm going to take classes and see what happens.
But you're only like 19, 20, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then I moved to Los Angeles.
After San Francisco?
Yeah.
So you play guitar once with some other person. Mm-hmm. You put that on the back burner.
Yeah.
You don't do any more training after ACT?
I did some acting classes in LA, but I never found one that I loved.
So you're going to be a classically trained actor that just didn't take classes?
Yeah, totally.
So you just so you took yourself very seriously.
Yes.
And you're like, I'm going to be a serious actor.
Yeah.
And you come down here from San Francisco. Like, the one thing about San Francisco is you can be a whack job mm-hmm. and sort of find your place and then be a big shot whack job. You come down here, it's just sort of like, what do I do?
Yeah, I didn't know where to start.
I don't know how. Yeah, what did you? How did you start? Just coming
down.
Well,
my first thing that I did, I still can't believe I did this, but you know, it was before it's not before the internet, but it was before everyone had everything online, so you could kind of lie on your resume.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, well, I'll just make one up.
No Wikipedia.
Right. And as I get more jobs, I'll replace the, false jobs with real jobs. And so I just made up a postcard that had a headshot on it that was had reviews of this play that I was in. I was Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, by the way, in San Francisco summer stock, which is not true. There is no San Francisco summer stock.
Sure.
I just made it up.
Sure, why not?
And I put reviews on this postcard.
So you're a liar.
I'm a liar. I didn't know what to do. I was like, I didn't know a single person. I knew nobody.
That's so crazy.
I knew no
What the fuck
people.
Were you thinking? So
I don't
what,
know.
Did you end up in Culver City? Where'd you end up?
I ended up at Park La Brea.
Oh, God. Well, that's not bad.
It was fine.
That made sense.
Yeah, it totally made sense.
Well, like a little studio at Park La Brea. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So you're like, I can just walk to the Grove.
The Grove didn't exist yet.
Or, I mean, I can walk to the farmer's market.
Yeah.
And eat there.
Yeah. It's just like, I'll just start existing and see. And I sent out this postcard and I got some auditions from the postcard.
What do you mean? To who?
I sent the postcard to casting directors.
Really?
Yes.
Well, they probably looked at you and thought like, well, she seems chipper and like wide-eyed and
yeah,
blonde.
I can't believe it worked. Yeah. But I got some auditions and I got enough sort of positive feedback that I was like, okay. And
where'd you get the casting directors? Did you have a book? Is there a book?
There's like a book you could get at the Samuel French bookstore.
So you just did that. You're like, you went to Samuel French,
yes.
And the guy was like, should buy this book and reach out to these, like all these things just to sort of, you know, gently nurture dreams without overdoing it because the disappointment is coming. Here's your starter kit,
right?
To disappointment.
Yes. And I didn't think I was going to be disappointed. I was just
ready
to go.
No, it's good. You bought it. You bought the bill of goods. You thought like anything's possible. And it turns out that it kind of was. So you send it to casting directors, mm-hmm. And then what happens?
And then I started doing those casting director seminars. Do you know those ones that like now they're kind of illegal or something for some reason?
But, you'd pay for them to look at you.
Yeah, and it and I and it worked, and I started working, and I got an.
What was a casting director seminar? What happens there?
You pay, I don't know, it was like $35, and you get a class from them. They'll tell you their thoughts on auditioning, and then you get sides, and you get to audition for them. With the sides. So you kind of get to show them.
So the gamble is that they'll actually see something in you and call you back.
Yeah. And the worst thing that'll happen is you learn from the casting director. So it's fine.
So you come down here and you send these things out, you get some auditions, you do a casting director seminar.
Did a bunch of them.
Oh, they had a lot of them?
Yeah.
They all had them? So it was a real racket. So there.
People think that, but I thought it was great.
No, I'm just saying from their side.
Yes, yes, they made a lot of money, I'm sure. Yeah,
you know, because they're, but I guess if you are a testament to it actually working for you, then it's okay. It's not quite a racket because they were honest in the fact that they were looking at people.
Yeah, and I would get sort of one line here and there on things. I got my SAG card. You know, I would just get just.
Did you
little,
get an agent?
Eventually, well, I got so I. Did these a couple lines and things, and I would I loved this one theater company called the Actors Gang, and I had sent them my
Tim
headshot.
Robbins,
yeah, and I got cast in a play there, and that sort of led to other things.
Oh, okay, so let me just get this straight. Is this all happening in the first year you're here, kind
the
of thing?
Or 3 years?
First
it was
3 years.
It was a slow burn.
All right. Well, that's not a slow burn. I mean, some people never make it, so or never do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you do the casting, you get like one line parts on TV shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had like, you know, one line on Gilmore Girls or you know just things like that.
Uh huh.
One line on Titus. That was my first job
with Chris Titus.
Yeah.
That was your first set.
Mm-hmm.
How was that?
It was good. I think I said like, "You ready?" I think I had a line like that. Yeah, and that was it.
You were the "You're ready, girl."
Yep.
And then, and then, like, I'm looking at the credits now. So you're on Gilmore Girls for 5 episodes, and you do one line.
Well, no, I did Gilmore Girls as one character, and then maybe 4 years later, they brought me back as a different character, with real scenes.
Right. Okay. All right. So you're chipping away at that, and then you just auditioned for the Actors Gang in Culver City.
Yeah. It used to be on like Hollywood and Vine kind of.
Yeah. Before they got that space down there.
Santa Monica and Vine. Yeah. And I auditioned for a play and it was a really cool play that Tim Robbins wrote and directed. So
was
I
it
loved
political
it.
And charged?
Oh, totally. I played Condoleezza Rice.
Yeah.
In a Commedia mask.
Uh-huh.
And like Commedia.
He loves that Commedia stuff. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, like I just saw, like I liked him and I like his plays. I went and saw the most recent Commedia della Arte thing, which was basically a tutorial in the form.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was interesting.
A lot of movement, a lot of fun, big square stage. I like the way that stage is set up at the new place and
Me
when
too.
They use it like that.
Me too.
The whole square, you know?
Yeah, and I loved Tim. I loved working with him. And the play ended up going to the Public Theater in New York.
What was it called?
It was called Embedded.
Yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, so it ended up, you know, sort of going for a year probably. It was supposed to be, I think, 6 performances, and it just sort of kept going. And
you stayed in it a year?
Yeah, that's how things kind of started for me. And one day I was I did the play and I came out into the lobby and Clint Eastwood was in the lobby because Tim was doing Mystic River at the time, like all the Oscar kind of stuff for that. And Clint talked to me for a few minutes. And then
What did he say?
He was just he just was like, "Hey, how's it going?"
Whatever. Clint Eastwood, like with that with that squint and the tongue.
Yeah, I was mesmerized. I was just like,
I imagine that would be. I've never seen him in the flesh.
He's tall and striking, and has a sort of small voice. So you come to him.
I'm surprised that he was at a Tim Robbins play. I would think he would see it as some sort of liberal he's a bit conservative.
But Tim was in his movie, so he was in Mystic River.
Tim was great in that movie.
He was great. And so then maybe 3 months later, Clint's casting director, Phyllis Hoffman, called me and had me audition for Million Dollar Baby. And that's that was my first movie.
Who were you in that? Sister?
I was the sister. I was like, the white trash sister.
Oh, yeah. Who's that woman who played your mother?
Margot Martindale.
She's so good.
Oh, she's amazing.
She's so good.
I know. She's so, so good.
Like, I saw her recently. I feel like I saw her at the SAG Awards or something. What did I see her in? She always plays just like, kind of like vulnerable but horrible person.
Yeah, she can sort of lead with her grossest parts, just like, I loved it. So that was my first
That's
movie.
Crazy. So you work with Tim for a year?
Mm-hmm.
Now, like in a production like that, like I imagine that, is there an evolution to it or did it stay kind of what it was?
It kind of stayed what it was.
Really?
Yeah.
Once he got it, but was the process of putting it together?
That was an evolution, yeah. And that was, because I went in, I had auditioned to play Jessica Lynch. Do you remember that soldier, like the blonde soldier? And I ended up doing a commedia part. So it ended
I'm assuming
like
you didn't
that.
Do Condoleezza in blackface.
No. We all had commedia masks on. So.
Right.
No. Oh my gosh, no. That would have been not
bad.
Not great.
Yeah. So, and Tim was good to work with as a director. It was exciting. He created a good environment.
Yeah, he was awesome. And sort of for me, and I don't even know if he knows this, but he just, for me, became like the model of what you do, which is like when you're not working, you write.
Uh-huh.
And when you have time off, you make your own thing. And
did he tell you that or you just observed that?
I just observed it. He may have said it to me at one point. I don't know. But I just saw him just constantly working so hard. Like while he was at the top of his game, he won the Oscar that year. And he was just writing all the time and working and,
What did he win it for?
Mystic River.
Did he win the Oscar Best Supporting for Mystic River?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a brutal part.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
But
you just were impressed by his work ethic.
Yeah. And so then I want to do that.
Yeah. And then you get, that's pretty insane that you get Clint Eastwood hooked you up with.
That was crazy. I couldn't believe that was real. And then
did he tell you he was going to do it?
No. Mm-mm.
You just met with her? How did that?
I auditioned for she called me and said, come and audition for this
that's
thing.
But it must have come from him, huh?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Or maybe she was there. So now you're on your way?
Sort of. Yeah. I mean, it was just always sort of up and down and I would get little things here and there and I was just always hustling and but then when the writer's strike was about to happen, I knew that I was in sort of major trouble.
2008. Was it then?
Yeah.
That was brutal.
Yeah, that was brutal. Or
I was in the middle of writing something.
Were you?
Yeah.
What were you writing?
We had a deal with HBO, me and Jerry Stahl.
Oh, man.
Like, we were right in the middle. And then you're like, put your pencils down. Pencils down!
Yeah. Oh, no. God, that's the worst.
I mean, I wasn't essentially a writer, but I did finally get this deal to write this thing. And then it's like, what?
Was it a starring vehicle for you?
Yeah. It was a development deal. And, we were writing the script. And then the strike ended and we finished it. And then the head of HBO changed.
Yeah, just everything changed.
Yeah.
And I felt like it was.
How did it affect you?
Well, I could.
You were writing?
I was just acting.
Yeah.
But I felt, everything was about to change and I knew my career was kind of just going to be over when the strike was over. Because I was testing for a lot of things. I just knew that there was going to be half as many parts.
Oh, really?
And I wasn't.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. And I wasn't really successful enough in my mind to, to ride that out. And so I was like, I got to figure out what else I'm good at.
So you were just like kind of a bit player in your mind.
Yeah.
And probably a reasonable assessment.
Yeah, when I started Garfunkel and Oates.
Oh, it didn't seem like come from insecurity. You were being practical.
I was being practical. I was, my friend told me later, he was like, your career was going just well enough for you to not realize how terrible it was.
Well, yeah, or you were waiting for break.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't so much that it was terrible. You were in the game, but yeah. You needed a break.
Yeah. I was testing for shows and sort of in that game where you can tell yourself that it's going well.
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah, but you don't like have
But health you don't have any control
anything.
Over that. Yeah. Right. Well, that's just the nature of the thing.
Yeah.
But I mean, you're testing. That's huge to get that far up the rung of auditions.
Yeah.
You know, to do it more than once. I mean, that it's brutal, but that's it. But that's the roll of the dice. Like any one of those tests could have been the rest of your life.
Yeah, it could
on
have been
a TV
Mad
show
Men or something, or The Office,
or the other one, Big Bang Theory, whatever.
Yeah,
you've been on that.
Yeah.
More than once.
Three times.
Oh yeah, as a recurring thing.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah,
it was fun, and we wrote Kate and I wrote a song for it. For one episode.
Well, how'd you meet? Like, okay, so this after the writer's strike, mm-hmm. where you're pulling yourself up by your bootstraps, mm-hmm. so you don't fall down the hole of darkness and anonymity in Hollywood.
Yeah,
you enter the world of comedy.
Yeah, it was right before the writer's strike because I just, you know, we all saw it coming, and so
yeah.
I decided to try to see what else I was good at, and I wrote a short that I was going to direct for me and Kate, where she was playing my imaginary friend.
How'd you know Kate? How'd you meet Kate?
I met her doing commercials. We were both sort of getting called back to all the same commercials,
uh-huh.
so just from auditions.
Uh-huh.
I'd see her all. They were kind of casting girls with big eyes for a minute there.
For they needed looking for Keen paintings.
Yeah, pretty much. there'd be the audition for an elf, and it was both me and Kate would get.
Yeah.
A fairy. We were both there.
Right.
And so we met. We met actually in the audience at UCB. We were just there to see a show and started.
Did
talking.
You go there a lot?
Yeah, a little bit.
Uh-huh.
A little bit, and then we became friends. And I don't know if you had this. I don't know if you had this when you started doing comedy, but I always had a hard time finding people that I could sort of tell my dreams to.
Uh huh.
Do you know what I mean? Like tell my goals and dreams.
Well, I don't know that. I don't know if I was ever, looking for somebody.
No, I always wasn't. And Kate was sort of a safe space for that. And we used to go to California Pizza Kitchen in the Beverly Center and write down our things that we wanted.
Aww.
And we would put them on little napkins and save them in our wallets. And then we would go back a month later and read them to each other, say them out loud.
That's cute.
And we were both writing comedy songs. And so when I made my short, I was like, let's make it a musical.
Uh-huh.
And we did. And then our band was born from that.
Because she plays a couple instruments.
Mm-hmm. She plays ukulele, guitar, and piano, and trombone.
Trombone. And you play guitar?
I play guitar, a little bit of piano, and I play flute.
Flute?
Yeah.
You look like a flute player, a flautist.
I really do, yeah.
Yeah, were you a high school flautist?
Right. Yeah.
Oh, of course.
Kind of anything you think I was in high school, I probably was.
Did you ever try the piccolo?
Yep. I was in the marching band. I played piccolo.
You played piccolo in the marching band?
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you are.
Yeah, I am that.
You're in a marching band.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Oh, my God. How is this just coming out now? This is the crux of all of it.
Were you in the marching band?
No.
Oh.
I did design. Here's my connection to a marching band. My elementary school had sort of a ragtag marching band. It was a little private school. And they had a contest for someone to design the banner that they would walk with in front.
Mm-hmm.
And I won that.
Oh,
I designed
nice.
It. So I was more of an artist guy.
Okay.
Not a marching band
Well,
guy.
That is cooler.
That was cool to see my design in the Manzano Day School marching band. And I created this weird big kind of trumpety horn thing that wasn't a real instrument. It was just sort of an abstract.
That's cool. Do you still do that stuff?
Draw?
Or graphic design?
I don't really. I don't do any of it. No, I don't. And I was pretty serious about it. I mean, I used to do it a lot. A lot of drawing and I did photography in high school. And
when you're 80, you're going to start a George Bush style painting habit, I bet.
Yeah. George in the paintings.
Mm-hmm.
What a charmer. Everybody loves George W. Bush again in his paintings.
I know, it's so strange.
It's a little weird.
Mm-hmm.
But I did a horrible joke about him, about the paintings.
What was it?
Because he did that whole book of veterans, of injured veterans, weren't they?
He did?
Yeah, he did a whole book of paintings of Gulf War Afghanistan war veterans and stuff, Iraqi war veterans.
Oh.
And I thought, it's a rare opportunity. He gets to disfigure them twice.
Yeah, God, that's such a weird war for him to Select, since I believe he essentially caused it.
Yeah, it was. It's a little odd. I think he thought he was giving back somehow. I don't know. But yeah, no, I don't do any of that stuff anymore. Do you play piccolo anymore?
I play the flute sometimes.
Really?
I'm not that good anymore, but.
So you're a full on kind of dork.
Yeah. Yeah.
Marching band.
Marching band, musical theater dork. Yeah.
Well, musical theater, I get. Marching band's a little harder.
Well, that's what we had. We didn't have plays.
I get it. But like, that's like, you know, that crew. You know, they, you know, I, with marching band, I always feel like, well, I'm glad they have each other.
Yes. And we did, and it was nice.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I was a bully to them, but like, it was just definitely a different world than mine. Mm-hmm. There was just, I was too busy being sort of like, what's going to happen to make me a person? And they seemed to be sort of stuck in their identities kind of early.
Oh, marching band people?
Yeah. Just because like, this is who we are. You know, we're awkward.
Yeah.
We don't fit in, but there's a lot of us kind of in the same frequency.
I don't feel like I was ever in that frequency.
No. But you know what I'm talking about? Am I making it up?
My school was so small that it almost doesn't count what activities you're in. Because you can just kind of sign up.
Right, because everybody gets sort of involved. Yeah. There's just people that, that filled the roles and then the people that didn't do anything, the troublemakers.
Yeah, right. And I was just in everything.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. So you and Kate, you kind of get famous in comedy a little bit, huh?
It was crazy, yeah. It was...
How did that really happen? What was the arc of that? Because I think that's where I first saw you was with her.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
And you guys did my show. I think you did a live one.
Yeah, we did, yeah.
And I don't think I've done a one-on-one with Kate.
No, not yet.
Huh. But, so you guys start and you're writing songs, mm-hmm. and then what happens for YouTube? Because that's...
So we put our songs on YouTube, and, you know, it wasn't that big of a thing at the time, so we didn't expect anything from it.
Right.
We're just playing songs on my couch.
Right.
And then the creator of Scrubs, or one of the writers, called, and they wanted to use one of our songs as a musical number on Scrubs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and they hired Kate to play it with one of the actors on the show.
Yeah.
And so people were sort of started watching our videos after that.
Yeah.
And then we're like, I guess we got to write more songs.
Yeah.
And so we made more videos.
But you made some money off that song, huh?
A little bit, I think. Yeah, not. It wasn't crazy.
Did they use it on Scrubs?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't crazy?
It wasn't crazy.
Oh, because they only used it once.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so we started, you know, writing more songs, and then we thought, oh, we should play these out. We started playing them out, and but we didn't know anything about the comedy world. We, like, our first real show, we rented out this building called the Fake Gallery and just put on an hour-long show.
I know the Fake Gallery. Paul's Place?
Yeah.
Is it still around?
I don't know.
Hmm.
We thought you could just do an hour. Like,
yeah.
We didn't know anything. Like, we had that ignorance is bliss. We didn't know that comedians worked for years to do an hour, so we're just like, we'll just do an hour of...
Yeah, but you're sort of a theater act. It's not, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
different.
I don't think were there comics going like, who the fuck are these two?
No, we didn't really know any comics then.
Right. So I mean, I don't think any comics were judging you. It's like, they should only have two songs.
Right. Yeah. No.
You did a show. You did a musical variety show.
Yeah. So we did that, and then we did it again, and then after that, we started playing in the sort of crew that you're around,
the people I know, the UCB bunch.
Yeah, the comedy bang bang sort of.
Yeah, I was I was a latecomer to that, and it's not I'm not indigenous to that crew, but I know them all.
Right. Well, you were to us because you were there when we got there.
Sure. Yeah. So. I mean, like, because what year was that?
2008 or 9 or.
Oh, was it that late?
Something like that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was around trying to, you know, keep my presence up. Yeah. But it's weird because I've kind of cycled out of alt rooms, you know, and I'm back. Primarily working at the Comedy Store, and I don't
really.
Yeah, it's just, what am I going to do? Go over to Nerd Melt? Or right. Is it still there?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, Kate and I haven't played a show in a while.
Right. Well, you guys have gone your separate ways.
Well, no, we actually haven't. We've been writing songs for animated movies, and now we started writing Garfunkel and Oates songs again in the last week.
Just now?
So, just now.
Yeah. God, I'm catching it. It's hot off the press.
Yeah.
Big news.
Yeah.
Garfunkel and Oates back at it.
Yeah, so we're going to be playing, you know. Pretty soon, hopefully.
Like what? Doing a night at Largo?
Something like that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I mean, we'll probably just go and try songs out at, you know, a Nerd Melt type place. Just to see how they're received.
But what happened with all that? I mean, you kept doing like bit parts here and there, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That kept happening.
Yeah.
You were on Enlightened?
Yeah.
Who were you enlightened?
I was a co- I watched all I was of a those. Coworker.
Oh, that's right. You were one that right in with Mandzukas and
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I tested for that show actually for Sarah. I was that's what I was like in the sort of testing
yeah.
like level of things. I tested for that show against the girl who got the part, Sarah Burns, and then they were like, "Oh, we'll bring you back." So they wrote me a little part on there, and I was excited.
Oh yeah,
yeah, because everyone says that, and then nobody follows through. So it was nice that they did.
I like that show. I was sad when that went.
Me too.
When that went away. But so what happened with the Garfunkel and Oates show?
Your show was on IFC, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's right. You were there at the same time as me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You did one season.
One season, and it was a really intense experience. And,
but it got yeah. you got you into knowing what that experience was like.
Yeah.
I remember that because I was on, it must have been like my first or second season.
Yeah. But then when I started on another period and it was so easy, you know.
Oh. Well, and also it's not your life. You know, it's like there's something about like, and I found that too, where you're doing a show about your life, where your attachment to the material is a lot different than just something you're making up.
Yeah.
You know, that you don't want to get too far away from what the authentic thing is.
Right, and what actually happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That becomes problematic because it might not be good television.
Right. it might not be. It was, yeah.
And then there's a lot of people telling you, like, your life's not that great. It's not that, this part of your life and you.
Right.
Yeah, we don't like it in the story.
Yeah.
So that's a little harsh.
It was, yeah. Kate and I, it was a really, like, weird time in our lives, and I cried a lot, and Kate and I got very close.
Did you find that you know whatever you went through, you made changes in yourself that you learned? Or
yeah, well, I think so. I think I got less emotional about things and stopped. I tried to take things less personally, and it was just a lot. I felt like it was kind of our story, and it was big stakes, and
yeah.
But then I started another period, and I was like, oh, this is fine. Like. Doing a TV show is not that bad.
Well, yeah, because you do get to, you know, now you get to just be creative outside of the personal risk of it. Yeah, it's different. Like when I took the gig on Glow, and I have nothing to do with the creativity, the creation of that. You know, but I'm just acting. I'm just going to be this guy.
And you're really good on that show.
Oh, thank you. Whereas like when it was my show, like I had to do everything. I was part of the writing, part of the, you know, in every scene. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get tired of yourself. You're like, yeah, it's a relief.
Did you like having a show?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think we did a good show. You know, ultimately, given the money we had and they let us do it. You know, they were never really a problem, you know, that. And also my showrunners were pretty aligned with what I wanted to do.
That's good.
And the stories were good, and I was real happy with it. You know, I don't think a lot of people saw it, but that's all right.
It's hard. It's hard being on a basic cable channel.
Yeah, but there are those issues. But I think ultimately, looking back on it, you know, I chose to end it after four seasons, and also I learned a lot about being on set, about acting, about, you know, I don't know how much I learned about producing, or I did learn something about writing, but you know, specifically about being in front of the camera. It was pretty useful.
You feel like you learned how to be an actor, sort of?
Sure, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Even though I was playing myself, you're still playing yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you're always...
It's like, you know, people who are like, were you just doing you? It's like, yeah, but you got to act.
Yeah.
You know, their takes and their cuts are, you know...
It's not a documentary.
Yeah. So that was good. Mm-hmm. So another period, how did that come about? Because now this is season three?
Yeah, season three. Natasha Leggero and I, we decided we wanted to make a short.
Yeah.
And we thought of this idea over some wine and loved the idea and just decided to finance it ourselves. Because we wrote
the short.
Because we wrote this script.
I love her, by the way.
Isn't she so funny?
Yeah, I like her.
Everything she says is funny.
I like her as a person.
Me too. Me too. But we wrote this sort of 15-page short, and it wasn't that funny on paper. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, we need to make it to show people like what the show would be. So Natasha and I made a short, basically a pilot presentation ourselves of what the show would be. And then we took it out and pitched it, and everyone passed. Everyone turned us down. But we were kind of like, but it's so funny. Like,
they're not getting it.
Yeah. And so we had our agents get feedback, and everyone had the same feedback, which is that they didn't see where it could go. They felt like it was sort of a one note kind of sketch. And so we're like, great. So we'll show them where it can go.
Go on forever.
Yeah. So we went, we wrote the pilot and we wrote sort of a Bible for the whole show and every character showing where it would go. And we recut the short and made it more just like poppy and faster.
It's so fucking weird to me because it's sort of like, you know, Upstairs, Downstairs went on for a while. Like they're the I don't even know if that's the right show, but like what's your satirizing, those things go on forever.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what we thought. So we're like, we can show them. Yeah. But they all had the same criticism. So we're like, okay, well, there's something to that. We're not showing them where it's going.
Sure.
And so we went back and pitched it again and sold it
to Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what's even more impressive than that is the fact that, you know, you're on still. Like,
I know. You know, isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
It's crazy to get a show made. It's crazy that we're still on.
Yeah. Well, the fact is like, and that wasn't a comment about it's not good. It just doesn't seem that anything survives more than two seasons, especially on that network, if I'm not mistaken.
It's so hard to get anything to go. We feel very lucky.
Well, I mean, you must have figured out some sort of, budget line, because I mean it is a pretty ambitious show in terms of, you know, doing a period piece.
Yeah, but it's a low budget show.
No, I know, but you pull it off. I mean, it's a low budget show, but you still got to do what year is it in the movie?
Oh, 1902
in the series.
Yeah,
so you got to be true to that as best you can. You're not breaking that wall too often or at all, are you?
Well, no. So we just get scrappy, and we have really good crew people around us. Really good costumer, really good production designer, DP. They sort of, you know, make it so that it looks like a show and not a sketch.
Right. So there's still it's all around this one family.
Mm-hmm.
And you're ongoing with, do you know where this ends? Do you have a seasonal, or are you just going to keep going?
We have an idea of the last shot in the whole series, if we keep going.
Oh, okay.
Which you can fill in
between then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is Lillian and Beatrice, me and Natasha boarding the Titanic and just like waving, like going, like we're like, that feels like it's gotta be the last shot.
You just gave it away.
I mean, we'll see. Who knows if that'll end up happening, but we have this idea.
That's such a spoiler.
Oh man, I just ruined everything.
You ruined your last... Your very last episode, whenever that happens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see if it even gets there.
But. Yeah. But you work with all these people that, there's a whole crew. There's this crew of, like, these are people that I know, like Michael Ian Black and Brett Gelman and who else is on there?
Tom Lennon.
Tom Lennon's great. Mm-hmm. But who's the big
Jason
guy?
Jason Ritter?
Koechner.
Oh, David Koechner. Oh, I love him.
Koechner.
I love our cast so much. I love writing for them.
Yeah, and there are people that come in and out. They're not all there all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
We sort of go based on people's schedules because everyone's so busy.
Yeah, yeah. I think that, it's so funny that there is this comedy crew that they all kind of show up in everyone's stuff.
Yeah, it's really nice to have that.
It is, because you've kind of known each other for years. And
You're in their stuff and they're in your stuff, and you can also get people last minute, which is nice. And you know that they'll be amazing.
So now that this is done shooting, what do you do? Do you still go out and, are you doing movies or what's happening now?
I've really just been writing.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just finished writing a movie musical. So we'll see.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like a real musical?
Yeah. So,
like a romance or what kind of
movie? Yeah, kind of. Mm-hmm. Just like, but it's a comedy. So I'm going to try to get that made. And Natasha and I wrote a movie that we're trying to get made.
Yeah?
You know, yeah. I like making things more than auditioning for things.
Do you like making them more than being in them? I mean, would you ever want to just sort of like just be the writer?
Maybe. I don't know. I do like being in them though too. So.
Have you sold scripts?
We sold one. Natasha and I sold this movie called Buffalo Tens, which is the one we're trying to get made.
So you're staying involved. So you sold it. Are you guys in it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Currently.
Yeah. You are.
Yes. Yes.
So that's the idea. It's a project for you, too, that you sold.
Yes.
And it's not a period piece.
No. It's about a matchmaking service in Buffalo. It's like Millionaire Matchmaker, but set in Buffalo.
She comes from like...
Rockford, Illinois.
Right.
So same kind of... Yeah.
Huh.
We have similar trajectories, I think, Natasha and I.
Yeah. Well, she's got like a severely kind of trashy background. Right?
Yeah.
But yours doesn't seem trashy. It seems... Just rural.
Yeah, I would say that's true.
Well, congratulations on the new season.
Thank you.
And I'm glad you're keeping up with the flute.
Thanks, yeah. Thank you.
And it's nice talking to you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right, that's the show. Go to WTFpod.com/tour For those of you in London, April 16th, Royal Festival Hall. In Stockholm, Sweden, April 19th at the China Theatern. Tickets available. Oslo, Norway, April 22nd at the Folketeatret. April 23rd, Amsterdam, Netherlands at the Royal Theater Carré. I should know these. Dublin, Ireland, April 26th at Vicar Street. Those are selling very well, so I would get those tickets. I will get my material together. You get your tickets. I can't fucking talk. Jesus Christ. Maybe I can play a little 3-chord guitar for a minute and we'll get out of here.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.